Welcome to the Frontline Herbalism Podcast with your host Nicole Rose from the Solidarity Apothecary. This is your place for all things plants and liberation. Let's get started. Part 15, Organising with a Chronic Illness. The following two chapters were written after a call out for contributions from people who had experience of organising and participating in social struggles with a chronic illness. Thank you again to everyone that has contributed. I have aimed to weave in as many words of other people as possible. Some people wish to be anonymous and I have used fake names with an asterisk, while for others I have used their first names. Others are nameless and are simply integrated into the text without direct quotes. There was so much material, this blog is in two parts. Part one, how it feels. Part two, what we can do to not leave people behind. Please note this blog focuses more on people's negative and harmful experiences. Part two focuses on inspiring examples of when people have felt supported and what we can do differently. Introduction, dismantling my ableist worldview. I have a lot of experience supporting partners, friends and family members with varying different illnesses, from bipolar, clinical depression and other mental health challenges to chronic fatigue, being a wheelchair user and more. I've supported mates survive cancer and I've helped people I love leave this world. But until this year, I've never really been chronically ill. Colds, viruses, an appendix out and broken bones, but never a grinding long-term illness or the sense of despair that it evokes. Folks that have been reading my blog will know that I care a lot about radical honesty. And in this honesty, it is important to say that until this year, I had no real understanding at all about what my mates were really going through. I'd attend gatherings like Earth First or Reclaim the Fields and never be fazed by camping or walking miles across rough ground. Late nights, early starts, long journeys, chronic stress. I felt like I could buffer it, almost thrive in it. I judged others for not keeping up the pace. Check out my When Did I Get So Mean chapter. I was totally and utterly stuck in an ableist perspective of the world. The normative body was my own, white, slim, ableness. All other experiences involved a more intellectual kind of empathy and in some ways a learned political performance where I was always in the support role. This blog, therefore, is about how it feels to be experiencing a chronic illness while being involved in social struggles, an inquiry into people's experiences of illnesses through burnout or trauma and in relationship to engaging in movements, campaigns, organisations and collectives. Deadwood? What was upsetting about the emails I received was not so much the debilitation, pain and distress caused by the actual illness, but the attitudes, reactions and lack of support in response from people identified as comrades and close friends. Lynn is an incredible organiser who I have looked up to since I was a kid. Involved in SHAC, Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty from day one, Lynn was brutally assaulted at the beginning of the campaign at an action blocking the A1 near Huntington Life Sciences. Pulled off a tripod more than 20 foot high by police, Lynn was hospitalised with a broken leg, had more than 5 hours of surgery and experienced multiple complications. She was in a wheelchair for months and has had an array of after effects, including PTSD and continuing chronic pain. Now Lynn has mild scoliosis, dizzy spells, permanent scarring, episodes where she can barely move, diagnosed as ME, and bursitis in her right hip after years of overcompensating for the left. While Lynn's story is a blog post or book in itself, I wanted to highlight some of the feelings she has experienced when still being heavily involved in the animal liberation movement with a disability, chronic illness, and the aftermath of psycho-emotional health effects post-trauma. In terms of what has been traumatic, Lynn describes some of the behaviour she has witnessed and been subjected to. Denial, ignoring it as though it hasn't happened or is not in any way relevant to the campaign, not being involved in decision making on how this should have been handled, the attitude that anything bad that happens during activism should be brushed under the carpet as to not put the new people off, the attitude that it is weak, negative, harmful to the campaign to cry or talk about what had happened, the idea that there are those who make decisions and those that have to go along with decisions, and an expectation that activists should do as they are told by other activists. It being intimated that I was not doing enough, being post-injured or when I have had periods of being unwell, being told by some individuals that I let the side down by having a blood transfusion, anaesthetics and antibiotics, which I would have died without, some arbitrary cut-off recovery period made by others. Very little long-term support, something cited by many activists, whether they have been imprisoned, seriously injured, psycho-emotionally damaged by activism or all three. the term deadwood being used to describe those who have pushed themselves to exhaustion, telling other activists that my injuries were minimal so that there would be no negativity, being told that I play being a victim. Lynn's words were painful to read because Shaq and the wider animal liberation movement were my lifeblood for so many years. I was brought up in the movement. These people were my elders. I feel like I've spent the last 5 years since prison trying to unlearn all the harmful, abusive, problematic stuff I soaked up like a sponge during those years. Don't get me wrong, I also learned a lot of amazing things, and the movement was an antidote to equally shitty things in my life. I am desperate to work for animal liberation, but feel little affinity or safety anymore engaged in struggles where experiences like these are endemic. I believe the movement has failed the animals, not because we didn't work hard enough, but because we failed each other. We didn't support each other during the repression. We didn't look behind us when people burnt out. We lost hundreds of amazing people and their time, energy, and passion because the work of caring for each other was not valued. No fucking war ever again. There is no binary between what gets called physical and mental or psycho-emotional health. There is obviously a brutal binary that capitalism cultivates that somehow what gets called our mental or psycho-emotional and physical health are separate. I was expecting lots of emails about people's quote-unquote physical health issues, but in fact, more and more were around social anxiety and feelings of depression. The challenges that were highlighted included just how much it can affect someone who is struggling with their mental health to hear relentless negativity and unending criticalness of each other and the tactics of different groups. Obviously, critique is completely essential to learning. However, the effects of people slagging each off, criticizing and belittling others are draining and harmful and can aggravate folks struggling with their psycho-emotional health beyond what we may know. Likewise, for those who experience social anxiety, trying to organise with people who dominate meetings or who are extremely grumpy and who take their anger out on everyone around them unwarrantedly is really difficult, says Helen. For a fellow comrade with experiences diagnosed as bipolar, they wrote how inflexibility is damaging. In part two, I talk about how the way the organisations are structured can radically alter the feelings for people experiencing illnesses. Once again, organising with anxiety and or depression is a blog post itself and one that I definitely don't feel qualified to write. Illness equals weakness. The reproduction of the worldview that illness equals weakness that our society perpetuates is a recurring theme in all of the contributions. Ali told me, within movements, we seem to have fostered a culture of illness equals weakness, showing that any signs of vulnerability are frowned upon and we have to present ourselves as eternally strong warriors that feel nothing of the repercussions or draining effects of activism. As a result, we have ended up encouraging completely unhealthy, unrealistic, unsustainable, and damaging ways of campaigning and living. Ways that actually write off long-standing campaigners or cause people to drop off the radar entirely. And how many times have we all heard about burnout? This is not a simple byproduct of campaigning, but a direct result of our attitudes as a movement and a lack of understanding for how we exist and organize within various struggles. Illness is not a weakness. Feeling upset, feeling tired, feeling unwell are not anything to be looked down upon. It doesn't make you less of an effective activist. What affects efficacy will be how we deal with these issues and how we manage our workloads. What is clear for folks with chronic illnesses is that a large source of anxiety is worrying what people will think of them. For example, Helen says people act like if you don't go to X event, you don't care about the issue. There is an unending worry that they will be perceived as uncaring, uncommitted, and apathetic simply because they cannot be physically present at meetings and actions. Fears of being perceived are lazy, are frequent, even when they believe their comrades are right on and have a good understanding of these issues or even illnesses themselves. Am I a burden? All the challenges we experience when organising, fear, stress, pressures on our relationships, all of these are aggravated by chronic illness. Ali shares that chronic illness can also add to pre-existing feelings of helplessness and vulnerability that people often feel when involved in a struggle. It renders you unable to fight, not for others and certainly not for yourself. Those feelings can be exaggerated further if fellow comrades are unsympathetic or make you feel bad about not being able to participate in certain activities. Those that contacted me also shared that they felt like they were unwelcome burdens. They are aware of their often more intense needs and don't want to quote-unquote burden people, especially friends and comrades who are busy organisers. I've definitely felt unable at times to reach out to close friends that are comrades because I know how much pressure they are under. I have felt embarrassed and ashamed at times for needing to take a step back, for needing to admit I can't do something or that I need support. For example, right now with my ribs, I can't even carry a rucksack. For months, I couldn't even lift my laptop for fear of a flare-up. I'd have to bashfully ask mates or my mum to carry these things for me. And while only a small thing, these experiences, if not responded to with kindness and care, compound the feelings that you are useless, pathetic and needy. You hate yourself for putting on people. Fatigue and limited energy. Overwhelming contributions for those about fatigue. One person wrote that disabilities that involve severe fatigue mean that you have to ration your energy extremely carefully, often even for quote-unquote small things like going to the supermarket or having a meal with your housemates. Sometimes people, including activists, really don't understand this at all and think that just because something is easy, even trivial for them to do, doesn't mean I can necessarily do it right now. I can very rarely be spontaneous, and unexpected things can throw out my entire day or week. It's not just a tiredness thing. When I run out of energy, I completely lose the ability to communicate with most people and to complete basic tasks and have to hide in my room until my energy comes back. When I was first sick with costochondritis, I could maybe manage an hour a day of work before needing to lie down again. It meant I had to brutally ration my energy and therefore totally limit my involvement in all the collectives that had been the backbone of my life. And unfortunately, in capitalism, that energy must often first go to earning money so we don't go under. For those with little practical support, it might be making themselves one meal a day uses all the energy they have. Feeling left behind. When needing to take breaks, at whatever timescales, people feel disconnected and sometimes even punished for not being available or present. Involvement in a struggle is generative of relationships, connections, and time with people you feel an affinity with. If illness equals absence, then you lose a lot, sometimes even all of these relationships. The most visible impulse in all of these contributions that I read was that more than anything, people do not want to be left behind. There is an overwhelming desire for people to be involved, to resist, to fight, to struggle. Sam wrote, please don't just avoid us and find someone else to fill the gap we left, like we were only ever important as another body in the physical actions and resistance. Living with a chronic illness is revolutionary struggle. The next section could be a blog itself. I wanted to end with an important point that was contributed by Aaron, a comrade of mine, who shared their feelings from their years of experiences diagnosed as bipolar and epileptic. When I consider what struggle in a social, economic and political sense actually means, for myself at least, I begin with this quote from Raoul Vinegan. People who talk about revolution and class struggle without referring explicitly to everyday life, without understanding what is subversive about love and what is positive in the refusal of constraints, such people have a corpse in their mouth. For many years, bipolar disorder and epilepsy have determined the form of my struggles. Remembering to eat, sleep, wash, go shopping, do the laundry, vacuum the floor, clean the kitchen and do the washing up. Or just, even after remembering, gathering the energy to do at least one of them. Then the flip side, having too much energy and being reckless, arguing and fighting strangers, spending money that's not even mine, trying not to lose too many friends. On top of this, worrying that I may have a seizure and walk into a main road again. But I have to live my life, and it has to be the drive to go beyond the everyday constraints thrust upon me by poor health that has brought me into direct conflict with the crippling insanity of capitalist social relations. How I've chosen to struggle against this has also been defined not just by the current state of revolutionary and radical social struggles, but the form they've taken. My ability to participate in particular struggles is fundamentally down to how they organise, how much this organisational practice enables me to participate. Part 15, journal questions. How does internalized ableism show up for you in your life? How have you received societal messages that illness equals weakness? What attitudes have you seen from comrades towards people with chronic illness? How have you felt perceived if you haven't attended or participated in something due to illness? How have you perceived others? How has chronic illness made you feel like a burden? How has it felt to reach out for support? Thanks so much for listening to the Frontline Herbalism podcast. You can find the transcript, the links, all the resources from the show at solidarityapothecary.org/podcast.